Okay, you two.
Yeah.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Hi. This week we had our first ever Beans Christmas party.
We did, didn't we?
That's true, yeah. I mean, if you were in the Fitzrovia area, you know, this week, you already know there was the Beans Christmas party.
You'd know. Woo! mama. Wow. I did not know that a man could have that many nipples, Ben.
And I've never seen a police horse riding another police horse into
a fire station.
Into a fire station and then getting in the fire, into the fire engine.
Exactly. Neither have I. And I've also never seen a man just only delivering lines from Ghostbusters all night, like Woz did. the way he committed to that.
Yeah, the old social skills are a little rusty, I'll admit.
Yeah, they are a bit, aren't they? Well, it's because of the new media age we live in.
It is. So I panicked. I spent the preceding 10 days memorizing the script.
Yeah, that's right.
And just that was meant to be a backup, actually.
Yeah.
But then I opened with it. That was my gamble.
You opened with it. And then once you're committed to
couldn't stop.
Yeah. And also stage directions as well. That was quite... Oh. They were grueling, weren't they?
Yeah. I was tough company.
I've got a bone to pick with one of you two about the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had a nice time. We were in a nice pub. We had the fire.
We did, yeah. We were a toasty little nook.
That's right. We had a fire crackling. We had a little warm nook.
Yeah.
A crackling fire. A shelf full of books, wasn't it? It was one of those pubs that had loads of books.
Yeah, it was one of those pubs that uses books as a kind of like decoration. I mean, nobody's meant to read them.
It's sort of Instagrammable book. They're bought sort of in bulk. There'll be an internet business somewhere which sells books for pubs. It'll be called Books for Pubs. And the four will be a number four. Pubs will have a Z on the end. Maybe three O's on books just for a bit of fun. Wouldn't it be Boogs for Pubs? Wouldn't it? And it'll be run out of someone's garage in the Isle of Man, wouldn't it?
And then we moved on to a curry place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Of course we did. Of course we did.
And with the curry place, the vibe is obviously we'll shout out the curries, shout out the rice, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Everyone puts an order in. And Henry ordered four prawns.
In for a penny, in for a prawn. Oh, four. In for £15, in for, it turns out, four prawns. Yeah, it was... I think it's one of those items you put on the menu for Christmas divs like me.
Well, when you're in Fitzrovia in the very centre of London, in December, that's the time and the place for prawns, isn't it? That's
exactly.
You can't not have the prawns.
You can't not have the prawns.
Because they would have been freshly caught that morning, exactly. I imagine. You know, Fitzrovia is a mere 150 miles from the sea, so you're getting the freshest.
The freshest Thames estuary prawns.
I think a lot of them are actually, Ben, now. It was a 4.5 on TripAdvisor restaurant.
Okay.
Was it?
4.5.
Did you know that going in?
Yeah, I checked it out, mate. I didn't go in a place without checking out the...
You want to know what the mob thinks?
They're not stars either, they're green, the globules. It was 4.5 TripAdvisor globules.
Mike likes to go against the grain, look for something with two or fewer, isn't it, out of five for you, Mike?
I like a dare.
I like to eat food in a place that's just about to turn it around.
Just at the moment when the suits have come in and they're trying to shut things down, that's when people raise their game. That's when it gets interesting.
You want to go there in a place where you can actually hear Gordon Ramsay in the background shouting at the staff and making them cry. It's not good enough! I want to be able to see my face in these prawns!
Yeah, I want the Salvation Special. That's what I want.
Yeah, for you, a 1 out of 5 hygiene rating coming in is a harbinger of greater things to come.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they've been at the bottom. They're going to make it to the top. You don't want people that are just coasting along
come on.
At 4 stars. Do you know what I mean? But no, 4.5 stars or globules in TripAdvisor. Well, and what that means, Ben, I think, is those prawns actually would have been fished from the sewers directly beneath the restaurant. Okay. That's what I like to think.
By hand, caught by hand.
Hand caught.
Lightning fast hand action.
Well, Mike was having ordering panic. Mike didn't know where to look. Because, again, it's been a while since we've all socialised, hasn't it?
I don't get a lot of airings generally. I was genuinely speaking in a sort of curry house panic. And
I
was at risk of doing the classic sort of provincial middle-aged man thing of just basically ordering 8 meals worth of food.
Yeah.
And you stopped me from doing that, and I was grateful for that.
Well, you were going to say, just connect this hose up to some korma, and we'll just deal with the other end of it.
Yeah. And I'll just talk us through the library scene from the beginning of Ghostbusters, which is a seminal moment. Okay, go. Okay, I'd like to apologise for the prawn order. It was a mistake. ordering is obviously a bit stressful in general because you don't want to make a mistake. And so I had myself prawn curry lined up, and then I suddenly thought, maybe it's not special enough. It's the Christmas do. Also, I discovered a separate section of the menu. That's what it was.
Ah.
Just as he was taking the orders, I flipped the page. There was
the food side, wasn't it?
The food side.
Because before that, you were just going to get five Diet Cokes in it.
That's right. And a bowl of warm lager. And there was this thing, it was called Tandoori Prawn Sizzling Special on a Sizzle Plate sort of thing. It's designed for, it's running a restaurant, it's a hard business. There are just ways of monetizing certain types of person. So there'll be a Christmas div who wants to get something a bit special, or maybe an out-of-towner who's trying to impress
someone. You wanted the presentation. You wanted the sizzle.
I wanted the little bit of theatre, isn't it, that you get with the sizzle plate.
Yeah.
You know when a sizzle plate comes through and other people in the restaurant, you sense them cooing.
Oh.
Anyway, I ordered a plate of tandoori prawns.
Mm. Sizzling. Sizzling prawns.
That was sizzling. Yeah, I ordered a plate of sizzling tandoori prawns. It just felt like they had a bit of pizzazz and a bit of wow about them as a dish. But often this is the way, when the things turned up, you had two nice bowls of warm, sort of comforting and appetizing looking curry. And I just had...
Your meal was mostly steam, as it turns out.
Yeah.
And when the steam cleared...
It was mainly steam and theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was mainly pizzazz.
It was the Emperor's New Prawns.
It was the Emperor's New Prawns. It was pure wow factor. And you know, I love a bit of wow, but it's nutrient poor, isn't it, wow?
You can't feed an army on wow,
you? Can't feed an army on wow. It was like you're sort of carrying a sort of dry ice machine through the restaurant, wasn't it? There was a lot of sort of slightly pink-coloured steam coming off it. And it felt like, if I was Cyndi Lauper, it would have been ideal. Do you know what I mean?
Because you could have sung True Colours to the prawns.
I see true colours shining through
pink.
But also, there was a scam element to the whole restaurant, right?
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Well, when we got in there, we sat down at what looked like normal-sized tables. As we sat at the table, we realised it was a tiny table and the chairs were tiny and everything was slightly smaller than the real...
It's a classic Soho trick.
That was a strange... Yeah.
Everything was tiny in there.
I didn't understand what the reason for the optical illusion was, particularly.
Well, it's to fit more divs in, isn't it?
You get more people in.
It's just div numbers, is it?
You maximise your div numbers and...
It looks like there's a space, but actually it's a tiny doll's house.
Exactly. And also, you can serve smaller portions.
Oh, so your prawns looked bigger in that restaurant than they actually were.
Compared to the tiny table, exactly.
That's true. They did look like quite hearty prawns, didn't they? But they were probably just standard prawns.
I think they were actually shrimps.
You also asked if they were going to be shelled. And they said yes.
Oh, that's right.
They weren't particularly, they were a bit.
They were semi-shelled.
Yeah.
I think the fact is they can't control what goes into the co-op frozen prawns bag. I think that's what the look he gave me was saying. Also, just so in case people are finding it hard to keep up with the prawn chat, the prawn kingdom is divided by size, much like the tangerine satsuma world. So you start with king prawns, that's the equivalent of an orange.
Yep.
You then go down to prawn, that's a tangerine. Mm-hmm. It's then shrimp. That's a satsuma. Mm-hmm.
Where's Clementine fitting into this?
Is that a langoustine? A juvenile langoustine?
And a langoustine is a juvenile Clementine. Or vice versa. They all work both ways.
Okay, that's handy.
Just a bit of helpful stuff there.
Well, what's a tiger prawn?
That is a grilled lemon.
The bit you've got to get past to get to the rest of your shish, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
A swanky barbecue.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of those kind of like ballast foods, a bit like the tomato in a fry-up. It's just sort of there mainly for sort of keeping the plate evenly weighed.
It's theatre again, isn't it, really?
And a bit of theatre, isn't it? It's a prop. Essentially, it's a prop tomato. It's a prop lemon. A lot of them are reused. Actually made by the same people that make the daggers that go into the handle. but the problem with the prawns was that... They wouldn't have been an issue except that we were ordering on a share basis. We were ordered because Ben, you'd said the words, we'll just put everything in the middle and share it out, right?
Yeah, was that greeted with...
I was bang up for that.
I was up for that. But I think what that meant was that the prawns then, your words, you know, you had to reap a bitter harvest from those words.
Yeah, they stuck in Ben's craw. I was bang up for it because Ben, I can't remember what Ben ordered, but I'd like the sound of it. And I was in a food panic. I like the idea of there being options out there.
Well, I ordered what I always order, which is the meal on the menu that takes the name of the restaurant.
Oh, so you did, yeah.
That's right.
Which the waiter liked, didn't he?
That's
that
right.
Went down quite well.
And I remember later on at 3 a.m, Ben, with you going into a restaurant saying, I'll have the Burger King, please. No, how many times I have this? I don't want the Whopper. I want the Burger King. Thank you. That's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah. I want the Subway, please.
Subway.
But I had a very nice time. I don't want to suggest that the prawn fiasco, and that's what it was, an absolute fiasco.
It was a fiasco.
It was absolutely,
yeah.
It was a fandango dressed as a fiasco.
Took away from my enjoyment of the evening, which was a delight. But
the look on your face when you saw the prawns, Ben, was because you were thinking you'd done the maths clearly, which is we order 3 curries, we split them all by a third.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
We all order roughly, if you order a slightly more expensive one, you profit in the long run because you're all playing the same amount, mm-hmm. but you eat one third of it, potentially, or if you get an extra chicken chunk.
Well, you sort of spread the costs. So if you go big, you're actually saving two thirds in a way.
That's right. And there's that lovely Christmassy feeling of slightly doing over your colleagues. You get, so you just get a little. It's like a little cinnamon rush of that. Just a little extra spice, isn't it?
Just ring them out a little right at the end if you can.
Yeah, especially if there's someone there who's not drinking alcohol, where you can really screw someone who's been on the on the Diet Cokes all night.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Oof. Oh yeah. Just you wait. Whereas you then, when my dish turned up, I can see your face. You're looking at it going, I'm going to have to have a third of 4 prawns. Yeah.
Yeah.
But luckily, you know the way they left the tail carapace, the tail armor, it's the sting, isn't it? It's the prawn sting.
Yeah, yeah.
The scorpion end.
It's the arse scabbard, I think it's
called. The arse scabbard. You know the way they left the arse scabbard on each prawn, and actually that ended up being a really good way of, when it came to, I'm not going to say we fell out over it, but there was some pretty...
Well, Mike ate my arse scabbard.
He ate... That's true, because we were doing the arse scabbard maths. It was the end of the night, and we were trying to work out, there was basically one prawn spare. We were trying to work out who'd had enough prawn, you know. Mm. And that's the good thing about prawns, but especially when they're arse scabbard.
You're trying to use them like scalps, weren't you? You're trying to use them to work out where the prawns had last been, who had conquered, who'd vanquished these prawns.
Yeah, exactly. Important evidence. But Mike had swallowed Ben's entire arse scabbard whole.
Yeah.
Like a seagull.
Waste not, want not.
Yeah.
Are you one of those people, Mike, that eats apples with all the pips and everything? I think you are.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a restaurant, right? If you're in a restaurant, surely the rule is if it's in a restaurant, it's edible, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's why you ate the candle, wasn't it?
Yeah, you shouldn't put it in a restaurant if it's not edible.
And the card machine.
Exactly. And the waiter's trousers. All right.
Yeah.
You know, is this a tacit agreement that you can just go to town?
It's called a restaurant, not a rest not eatable.
Exactly.
Anyway, then after the meal, what I don't think you know, Mike, is that I tried to get an Uber back to where I was staying.
Did you know?
Back to the safety of the suburbs.
Well, because it was, I mean, it wasn't just late, was it? It was just,
some tales need not be told. Put it this way, I heard these words at one point. I'll have the spaghetti house, please. That's right, no, the house. I don't know how you construct it, but I want it. We were, weren't
yeah,
we?
Well, yeah. You're going to be getting an Uber, aren't you? When, when it's late enough that we're having to discuss whether or not tubes still run around midnight, you're going to be getting an Uber. Yeah.
Well, I missed the last train.
Wait, but Ben, you're skipping out a few bits here.
Okay, sorry. I didn't realise we were doing a full post-mortem.
Well, I think they can hear a little bit more about what went on that night. I mean,
sure,
it wasn't just us, was it? The whole team was there.
Well, the writers and the orchestra.
The writers, the script people, yeah. HR, orchestra, accounts. I mean, there was some crazy stuff going on, wasn't there? Dave from HR.
Had to fire himself the following morning, didn't he?
We had to fire himself. Well, we gave him the memo. he took it. He took it all right, didn't he? Pretty... Pretty wild, wasn't it?
So as I was saying, I tried to get the last train home, Mike, and I did that thing where I could touch it. I did touch it,
no.
But it was moving.
But you couldn't quite find it in yourself to Tom Cruise it.
That was it. I ran down the steps, and the train was like, it was stationary at that point. I ran up to it. I started hammering the button, the open door button.
Happened, is it?
Oh, I've been there.
And then the open door button just started moving to the left very slowly.
The cruel, that's part of the cruelty of modern technology, isn't it? And essentially, it's a version of the touchscreen universe, which is because we've demechanicalized.
Go on.
Yeah. Wait, that's still the old Christmas party in my veins. Because we've demechanicalized. Yeah. Because we've demechanicalized it. Because there was a time when, as the train pulls out, and I remember this, as the train pulls out, you're basically still fine. You can still kiss goodbye to your shore time sweetheart.
Still got those special handy doors that will, when the train's build up some speed, will gently forehand someone off the platform when they're not paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. You could, because you could run up and you could stick your hand in, and there was just ways.
Yes.
It wasn't particularly, to be honest, if it was just slightly moving, that wasn't a big deal. As far as I was going, I was still, you know, buying myself a couple of backup pasties and, you know, tipping the bellboy and stuff. You know what I mean? And in fact, I remember a school trip to Paris. Mm. It's like the latest a human being can ever be for something, but still just make it. It was like Mission Impossible. It was, but a sort of 8-year-old boy with his mother charging through King's Cross to get me on the train, just very, 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 very late. And we got onto the platform, and the train was basically halfway up the platform, and we ran. Obviously, everyone, the teachers and everyone were on the train, and the kids completely convinced that I'd missed it.
Yay!
And suddenly.
Oh no!
Suddenly it's
speed up. Did your mum have to throw you at the train?
Yeah, yeah.
So, does your teacher scream at the train driver? More coal, more coal.
Yeah. So you're right, Mike. I did hear the sound. Yay! That was before they saw me running up next to the train. I could hear them going, "Yay! It's the No Henry trip is happening. The No Henry trip."
And then the sound of 20 children tipping marbles onto the platform in your path.
And the head of history, I don't know why he brought this with him, but he actually had one of those barrels of hot oil they pour off castles in sieges. He was pouring that onto the platform.
Well, he's always trying to illustrate a point about a siege, isn't he?
Exactly. He sees everything in siege terms.
But you got it. Was this the channel? The underground?
This is pre-channel.
No, this is pre-channel.
Because I can't imagine the channel train having those doors.
No. It must have been a train to Dover or something, and then I don't know, I can't remember, but it was absolutely running up the platform and opening the door that's, you know, in motion, obviously receiving a volley of punches to the sternum, face, crotch and neck.
What, from the station staff?
No, that was from Head of French. And then a sort of incredible battle then took place between my mum and the Head of French. Mm.
I was promised a weekend off. He's coming to France with you.
Anyway, couldn't get the train. Tried to get an Uber because it was Christmas party again. There were no Ubers going. So I slept on Henry's floor.
Did you really?
Yeah. With sofa cushions, to be fair.
Yeah, with sofa cushions. No, it was good. Henry made a delicious Turkish flatbread and tiramisu salata platter, essentially.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's slightly... But it's still a crazy night, though. Come on, hey, whoa, yeah. I didn't know which side of that flatbread was the grilled side, and which was the side with the sesame seeds on, and which side was the other side, which doesn't have the sesame seeds on. Oh, absolutely, wasn't it? Oh, and I could barely get the fingers straight when I sliced it into fingers for dipping. Some of those fingers were a bit off kilter, wonky, weren't they? Oh, mad. Oh,
it was actually my first tiramisu salata as well.
Was it really?
What an evening. Yeah.
Huge fan of the old tiramisu salata.
Do you like tiramisu, Mike?
Used to regularly eat a tiramisu sandwich back in the day.
Did you?
Talking way back here.
Oh, yeah. Tiramisu salata.
Yeah.
Probably.
Don't mind who knows it.
Yeah.
The bad old days.
Did you move past it?
Well, you get older and wiser and
you do. I've had big, big, deep phases of tiramisu salata. I actually haven't had it for quite a while, but it just felt right that night. Me and Ben.
I think the reason I hadn't had it before is that I can't think of a single thing more disgusting than a handful of fish eggs.
Yes, and when it's served that way, it is unappealing. It has been hard to market. Well, they tried to copy the Kenko Beans adverts back in the day in the 80s, someone just shaking some fish eggs in their hand and then
cascading.
There was the ad, wasn't there? It was quite sexy. It was
Gillian Anderson, I think, And
it was Gillian Anderson, and she'd knock on the door, and it was next door neighbour.
Played by, of course,
Nigel Havers.
Nigel Havers. Havers. Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre.
Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Nigel Havers.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Top-end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Nigel. He's a luxury prince.
And she was like, sorry, I know it's...
I've just moved in and... I haven't got any fish eggs.
I haven't got any fish eggs, but I'm but I'm entertaining the Turkish well, someone who's very high up in the Turkish embassy.
A window cleaner, eh?
And a window cleaner.
Oh, Mike.
Yeah. but you have to presuppose that they've only got windows at the top floor, which is unlikely. So yeah. It doesn't work at all.
I still like it. Yeah. And then Nigel Havers, well, it's fantastic scene. He's like, well, you know what? I haven't got any fish eggs, but I do have two mature live female cod.
they've just come into heat.
They've just come into heat. We've been playing backgammon. We were going to have a bit of an evening together. Of course, it was the 80s. You could do this kind of thing.
But as luck would have it, they've just begun spurting row in the lounge.
They've just... And in fact, you could see... if you look down, I've actually got some of the bright pink jelly-like ovuli on my... landed on my loafers. Yes. And yes, that's...
That was a euphemism. But yeah, you have to work at it. And he shakes it up in his hand until it turns into a creamy, bright pink paste, smushes it into the palm of Gillian's hand, and away she goes. And that's very much chapter one, isn't it?
Well, it ran and ran, those adverts, didn't it? It was a big will they, won't they.
It ran and ran.
Will Nigel leave behind the two mature female cod and get together with Gillian? Mm-hmm.
Can they find a way to make it work all together, you know?
The mature female cod were played by Andy McDowell... and Dame
Rutger Hauer.
And Dame Rutger Hauer.
Thank you to everyone who has added a topic to the Beam Machine at enterthebeammachine.boats.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now let's turn on the Beam Machine and see what this week's topic is going to be. This week's topic, sent in by Emma. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Emma.
Thanks, Emma.
Is fairy tales.
Ooh.
A goose has laid a golden egg, and now comes little Jack Horner.
I've got licorice feet. Come and dance with me in the forest, licorice feet.
What is the name of Rumpelstiltskin? It's in the title of the book.
Rumpelstiltskin.
These stories are ostensibly for children, but they're freaky as hell. You will dream of them and cry. You will piss yourself at night. Ha 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 ha.
If you don't, it won't really matter because Sven, the boy with daggers for ears, will headbutt you. Ha 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 ha. And his mother, the owl with feet for eyes, will...
And so the brothers Grimm journeyed the land, harvesting stories from the poor folk of the land. Though some of the poor folk told them some absolute twaddle, and they put it in the book and illustrated it. Now everybody reads them every year to their children.
So who are the main ones? Brothers Grimm, as you mentioned. Yeah. Is there another one? Is Hans Christian Andersen, is he a different person?
He's a different person, but it's very much in the same gang.
I feel like he made them up more, though, did he? Hans Christian. Oh, I might be wrong.
But
I feel
the Brothers Grimm stories are all things that happened to them.
Yes. It's all
on one absolutely crazy bachelor weekend. Wasn't it?
Which they called the Taramasalata weekend. It's the first time either of them had ever tried Taramasalata.
And they went absolutely Google-brained. Yeah.
So which ones are which? Like, who's the best one between Hans Christian Andersen and Brothers Grimm?
Oh, I think Andersen is Little Mermaid.
Yes, he is. Yeah, that's right.
That's a Disney classic.
It's a Disney classic that's got its own bronze statue in a Copenhagen harbour, though, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. But every Disney classic is based on an absolutely horrific, blood-curdling story. So in the original, she'll, like, be decapitated by a crab.
Yeah, her soul will have been torn asunder.
Yeah.
And her robe collected every morning.
Yes.
That's right. To make Terra Muscolata for the king. Then the king's son will have seen the king eating Terra Muscolata, would have thought, oh, that's quite nice, gone to get him some and fall in love with the princess.
He'll fall on a spike and die. There's a lot more, I think in the original stories, there's a lot more needless deaths that aren't really sort of set up. It's not seeded anyway, it just sort of happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Fell down the stairs onto a bat trap and then was dead.
Yeah.
And then you just move on to the next bit of the story.
But I think that's why they're particularly blood-curdling and really frightening to read, because they're not like, you know, like obviously the Disney version has been formed by, you know, sort of story theory and, you know, there'll be...
An evil genius with a frozen head. Yeah.
Well, precisely. But you know, that evil genius with a frozen head has worked out that the rhythms of a story and, you know, when you meet the old-timey eel who wears one patent shoe with his bottom half stuck into it and does tap dancing and sings a helpful song or whatever. No, but whatever those, you know, I can't do it because I'm not Disney. But whereas the fairy tales, as you say, Mike, they have that kind of like anything can happen at any point. So it's terrifying because there's no logic to the story and it's not been calculated to please the masses like Disney stories have been. You know what I mean?
Life can't be that cheap if it's going to be a tentpole smash hit, right? Can't be exactly. As cheap as it would have been in the Bavarian forests of 18th century Europe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at a list of which ones are written by which.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it. The Brothers Grimm shit all over Hans Christian Andersen.
Whoa.
You're pretty prolific, right?
So Hans Christian Andersen, his most famous ones are The Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Banger.
It's a banger. And who can forget The Nightingale?
Me. Yeah. And most of our listeners. Yeah,
no idea what that is.
No idea what happens there.
The Steadfast Tin Soldier.
Yeah. That's quite a boring one, isn't it?
He's going to have to be incredibly steadfast for that to be entertaining. I mean, how steadfast? But almost the more steadfast you make him, the less entertaining it is.
Yeah, so the Brothers Grimm did, get this, this is smash after smash after smash.
Yeah.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Huge.
Great.
That's the Bohemian Rhapsody, really, of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, in the original... So the version we know is Cinderella is a woman who has some ugly sisters who are nasty to her, make her do lots of housework, falls in love with the prince, glass slipper. Obviously, in the original version, she's a maiden who is out collecting corn and an owl chews her neck off.
Yeah. And at the same time, in the land, there's a young rogue prince who is literally collecting the feet of young people of either gender...
to try and make what he describes as the ultimate wagon wheel, which is an entire wheel made of human feet that can transport him and the puppet of a heron that he was planning to marry down into the frozen wastes of the Arctic.
And the heron can only lie. It cannot tell the truth.
And if you ask it to tell a lie, please, your head becomes infested with a sort of cross between a termite, a wasp, and
an elephant.
And an elephant. And then a wise old woman appears and cuts your ass off. So, the original's a slightly... Disney took what he wanted, didn't he? Yeah. And left other
bits. Cinderella's original name in German is Aschenputtel. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which means your ass has been cut off.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, they also did. Hansel and Gretel, absolute stone cold classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant. The Simon and Garfunkel of fairy tales, aren't they? Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah. The Bon and Jovi of fairy
tales. They are the Bon
tales.
And Jovi. Yeah. Have you ever seen them unplugged at Hyde Park as well? They were absolutely superb.
When they bundled that old woman into an oven in front of everyone in Hyde
Park.
That's
right. Yeah,
incredible moment.
Yeah. Well, these days, of course, you'd probably have to bundle her into an air fryer, wouldn't you? So, but Hansel and Gretel, again, just to summarize,
that hasn't been sanitized, really. There's no, that's all, that's horrific.
Well, that's why there's never been a Hansel and Gretel Disney film, have they? Because they haven't worked out a way to sanitize it. Are they the two that...
They're the two who went into the forest to look for women who chose to live unconventionally.
That's right. So it's to shame them.
To go on a witch hunt.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah.
to shame and bake them as yeah. a warning.
It's a shame and bake. That was known as a shame and bake yeah. story.
Because that was the original title.
Is she the one that lives in a house made of sweets?
Yes. That's what Hansel yeah. and Gretel claim when they come out with their hands caked in dry blood.
Oh, I see. So you're not taking Hansel and Gretel's story at face value, Mike?
No, yeah. And the sweets, no one had found any trace of the sweets. And they claim that they were eaten by, yeah, sweet-toothed wolves. And that's why the sweets of the house is gone. And this, yeah.
But actually, they've just, in cold blood, murdered an old lady.
Yeah.
For being different.
Murdered her, exsanguinated her, and then put her on a slow roast with some shallots and diced carrots.
By the way, if you ever do find yourself in that situation, consider using three bean salad, jambalaya seasoning.
Especially in that run up to Christmas time.
In that run up to Christmas, when you start feeling that swampy Creole New Orleans feeling.
Simply blow it down a trombone onto any food. Is Hansel and Gretel the one where one of them is leaving a trail of bread so they know where to go back to?
Yes, and it's eaten by mechanical wolves. You know, it's pecked, isn't it? The birds, can I say, bird.
Oh, the birds aren't on your side in these
birds.
Stories.
Yeah, they're not on your side. Birds and pecking, it's not going to help. They never do you a favour, do they? Whereas obviously Disney completely turned that on its head by turning birds into these things that like sing and help you do housework and stuff, don't they? Yeah. Snow White.
It's very rare that the birds peck out anyone's eyes in a Disney film.
It's incredible, isn't it? I think like the animal kingdom is turned into a completely sort of different set of things in Disney. Because in fairy tales, it's wolves, mechanical or not, they're gonna strip you of your innards.
Yeah,
fast. Yeah, and they're not gonna take your time.
They're gonna jambalaya it.
And they're gonna jambalaya it hard. Whereas obviously in Disney, the animal kingdom are totally on your side, aren't they? When you're they're going to come around, they're going to sing, they're going to be soft floppy bunnies.
Yeah, you've got to watch the vultures a bit, haven't you? But they're just a bit cheeky.
Watch the vultures.
They're not too much of a threat.
Cheeky. They're not too bad.
And evil Uncle Scar.
Yeah, he's the exception, isn't he?
That's true.
Jeremy Irons.
Yeah. Saw him pissing in a car park. Did that ever go out, that fact?
I can't remember. We definitely bleeped it. There's a little Christmas Easter egg for you.
Little mm-hmm. Christmas Easter egg.
Okay, so next, Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, another. Absolute here we go.
Bang, bang, bang. Another old lady death, I think.
Well, he eats the granny
wolf
gets
eats the grandmother, right?
Yeah, and I think there are sanitized versions where the hunter manages to fish
slice open the wolf.
Yeah, fish the granny out again. But I have a feeling in the original that she's done for pretty much.
And then marry her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a pelt wedding ring.
Yes, and a dress of shiny wolf viscera. We don't need a buffet. We can just eat bits of dead wolf
yeah,
off your body.
It wouldn't have been a wasteful time. You're not going to sling that in the bin, are you?
Are there any morals to these stories?
I think the morals are generally like do as you're bloody told, right? If I say don't go into the woods, right?
Yeah, okay.
Just stay where you are, sit down, shut up. Okay. Otherwise, you will get eaten by a wolf, or torn to pieces by a witch, or baked, or whatever it may be.
Do your weaving.
Yeah. Do your eat your greens and do your weaving.
My favourite, I think, because it always freaked me out as a kid for some reason, is Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, yeah, that's really weird.
Because what or who is he?
I know. And how do you say skein? Is it skein or skin? Skein.
What's skein?
Well, isn't that what he does? Isn't that he's a sort of magical, weird goblin guy who can weave a skein of wool in a single night,
right?
Because isn't it a princess who's going to get like this? Has got a horrible prince who's going to kill her?
Is it unless she can do lots of weaving?
I think she's managed to bag a prince by saying, "Hey, get married to me. I can weave a skein of wool in a night," and he's gone brilliant. Let's get married. But if it turns out you're lying, then I'm going to kill you.
Isn't it her dad claimed?
Right.
In order to marry her off, her dad said she can turn straw into gold.
That's
I think.
It, yes.
Is it yeah, straw yeah, into gold? It. Okay.
Yeah. That's hard. That's one I know anyway. Yeah.
Okay. So you can spin straw on a sort of weaving machine and it turns into gold.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then unless she does it,
she's dead.
She's going to be murdered,
I think so, yeah.
So it's a classic pushy parents thing, really.
So hang on, the father has said he's trying to marry her off.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
He has falsified her marital UCAS form, essentially.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. It's like saying you're into jazz. It's something we all sort of do in a way.
And she said, "Dad, but I'm just not into jazz. I couldn't name two different types of jazz. I couldn't name a single saxophonist if my life depended on it." And, well, it turns out it might, darling.
So he overpromises that she can spin gold into straw. Gold into straw. So then what happens with Rumpelstiltskin?
He knows that this is going on. He appears magically because he just knows that he's summoned by trouble. And he says, I'll do that for you. But you have to, doesn't he make a, there's some, I can't remember what the bargain is, that eventually she'll have to marry him or something instead.
Isn't it worse than that? It's, once you marry the king, I can sort of take your firstborn child.
Oh, right. That sounds about right.
And eat it in a blackbird pie.
Yeah, I think it's eat it in a pie. Yeah.
Unless you guess my name.
That's it.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
But there's a bit of a late letdown in that she guesses his name, I think, by hanging outside his little hovel where he's singing, "She will never guess that my name is Rumpelstiltskin." It's a really, like, for a supervillain, it's a real letdown.
Such a bad move.
Also, what I don't understand is, right, she makes a deal. You can have my firstborn child in return for doing this. Hmm. He turns up and goes, I'll have the child then.
Yeah.
And then instead of just like making sure she goes through with the deal, he goes, well, I will give you one way out if you guess my name. But why?
Yeah, it's not a masterclass in supervillainry, is it?
But no, but there is a masterclass in supervillainry because that's how supervillains work, isn't it? That's like the Bond villain, you know, going, I'll just tie you up here with this stretched out bit of chewing gum and see you later at the Megatron laser with sexy assistant room, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, slamming James Bond there. It's quite good. There's a boring middle section of the story, isn't there, where she's just coming up with names. She's just guessing names. David, Clive, Humphrey, Stephen, John. You know what? I should have alphabetized. I'm going back to the beginning, but I'm going to alphabetize now. Aaron.
Aardvark.
Brad.
Baron. Bradvark. Really, it really lags in that middle bit, doesn't it?
So, yeah, she gets his name because she, as Mike says, hears him singing his Merry Rumpelstiltskin song. The bit that really freaked me out, and the bit I remember the most, is when she gets it right, he's so annoyed that he bangs his foot through the floor and he gets stuck. And then I was just looking it up to see like what happens then.
Mm.
So in the Brothers Grimm version, in his rage, he drove his right foot so far into the ground that it sank up to his waist. Then, in a passion, he seized the left foot with both hands and tore himself in two.
You're not getting that on the Disney Channel, mate, are you?
That's quite the mic dropping out, though, isn't it? That's amazing.
It really is. That is absolutely terrifying and blood-curdling.
Yeah.
I'm remembering now that I did find Rumpelstiltskin particularly frightening. There was a Ladybird book of it, which I think had him on the front cover.
Mm.
And I think they portrayed him as a sort of jester sort of looking type.
Yeah, but it's presumably quite gnarled and warty, right?
A gnarled, horrible, gnarled, warty little. But he had that real goblin energy.
Mm. I like Rumpelstiltskin dancing up and down. I live for mischief and mischief alone. Be my bride and I'll take you down to the Goblin Kingdom. Spoiler alert, it's a fucking shithole.
You know what I mean?
What's he driven by? That's the thing I
don't what's driving it. But that's what's so terrifying, because there isn't a logic. You know what it is? And by the way, thank you for joining me here at London South Bank for my talk on fairy tales. What it's about, Ben, is dream logic. Hi, I'm Henry Packer. And you are on the Nientob. It's the fairy tale zone. No, but it's dream logic, isn't it? Like, it doesn't have that. It doesn't really make sense. And that's partly why it's so terrifying. Like when one is in the cold clutches of a dream or a nightmare and you can't wake up. But the thing which weirdly absolutely terrified me about Rumpelstiltskin was just that name. Like, I remember wrestling, struggling, like how? But how can something be called Rumpelstiltskin? Mm. It's such a horrifying name. You know what I mean? It's a brilliant, it's such a brilliantly chosen name because it's so grotesque. Do you know what I mean? Rumpelstiltskin. Because like it's a bit like Norbert Dentressangle, actually. it's like you know, in terms of weird names, you had me at Rumpel. Yeah. You didn't even have to go through with Stiltskin, but because it's so overly like
it causes a visceral response.
Because in German, it's Rumpelstiltchen,
okay,
which means like little Rumpelstilch.
But what's a Rumpelstilch?
But I still don't know what a Rumpelstilch is.
Can I say I think for the sake of the bollockings that are coming,
yeah. Okay.
I'm going to suggest that I just read us the story, Rumpelstiltskin.
Okay. Well, because you think we've got it wrong?
Yeah, we're a little bit wrong. It's the topic's fairy tales. Let's hear a fairy tale.
Okay.
Here is the story of Rumpelstiltskin. In order to appear superior, a miller brags to the king and people of the kingdom he lives in by claiming his daughter can spin straw into gold.
Dickhead.
That guy's an absolute prick.
Oh, who's that, the dickhead? The dickhead who makes the claim or the dickhead who believes the claim?
Good point, Mike.
Oh, God, I can't believe... Listen, don't look at him. Look, just focus on your tankards. Everyone, lads, focus on your tankards. Don't look at him. He's just come into the inn. It's that bloody miller again with this absolute... Oh, shite he talks about his...
Apparently he's got an aunt that can shit emeralds now as well.
Oh, typical. Gustav. Can you pass me that small wooden bowl full of there are ye olde equivalent of scampi fries?
Deep fried pig bollocks.
You know what? We can gamify this story a bit as well, which is every time you hear a classic fairy tale trope, you can make the fairy tale noise, which is a distant gothic bell ringing. And we can just break it down a bit and analyze it. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
The king calls for the girl, locks her up in a tower room filled with straw and a spinning wheel. I was hoping that one of you was going to do that. But,
well, no, because that only happens in this one story.
No, but the tower room.
Okay.
I mean, having a tower room.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's the one with the long hair?
Rapunzel.
Rapunzel. Yeah, okay. She's in a tower room. Classic tower room.
She might be upstairs.
Classic tower room.
Yeah. Anyway, so the king looks her up and demands she spin the straw into gold by morning, or he will have her killed.
Don't mess about.
He thinks that this miller guy is he's got the measure of this dickhead.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And he's going to prove the guy's a dickhead by killing his daughter the next day.
Yeah, basically.
When she can't deliver. All right, nice. When she's given up all hope, a little imp-like man appears in the room and spins the straw into gold in return for her necklace of glass beads.
Oh, okay.
The next morning, the king takes the girl to a larger room filled with straw to repeat the feat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
The imp once again spins in return for the girl's glass ring. That was some crows being just flying out of the belfry.
Yeah. What was that for, though, for the ring?
No, that was for just repeated trope and increasing.
Sort of mugging at this stage.
It's a sort of
mugging with menaces.
On the third day, the girl is taken to an even larger room filled with straw.
It's one of those conical-shaped towers, isn't it? Go higher and higher up. Yeah, that's right. It's quite impressive at the time.
Yeah, it's a reverse conical. It's a classic reverse conical tower. Incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
Incredibly hard to build. And that's why it's such a status piece. On the third day, the girl is taken to an even larger room filled with straw and told by the king that if she can spin all this straw into gold, he will marry her. But if she cannot, she will be executed. It's a veritable rom-com, this one. Oh, it's so charming. Oh, the king, it's such a catch. Oh, yeah, it's quite... Yeah, I think that's another clanger. That's a clong, isn't it? Because it's sort of slightly... Let's put it this way. Another trope of fairy tales is the dating scene has moved on, hasn't it? Since these days. While she's sobbing alone in the room, the little imp appears again and promises that he can spin the straw into gold for her, but the girl tells him she has nothing left with which to pay. The strange creature suggests she pay him with her first child. So she's absolutely surrounded by complete twats. Her father is a complete twat, the king is a complete twat, and Rumpelstiltskin. I mean, it's saying something where he's probably the least of a twat of all of them, but he's not great. She reluctantly agrees, and he sets about spinning the straw into gold. The king keeps his promise to marry the miller's daughter. But when their first child is born, the imp returns to claim his payment. She offers him all the wealth she has to keep the child, but the imp has no interest in her riches. By the way,
I can't keep track of the time. The bell is ringing too often. What is happening? Who is in charge of the bell?
So hang on. I got this right. I don't think I got this wrong.
No, it's fine. You're pretty close, yeah. Sorry, I'm not having a go. This isn't a revenge telling the story, babe.
But I have already told the story.
Yeah, but we're getting it, you know, I'm just telling the full story. No? Wait, I'm telling the story of Rumpelstiltskin. We're getting the whole thing proper.
Okay. I'm just saying, I think I was...
You missed out on the detail about the increasingly large rooms. And that's what people are really in it for.
She offers him all the wealth, but the imp has no interest in her riches. He finally agrees to give up his claim to the child if she can guess his name within 3 days. The queen's many guesses fail. Derek. Clive. Nobby Styles. Grindor the Avenger. Caspian.
Norbert Dendrisangle.
Norbert Dendrisangle.
Gary Lindner.
Rumpelstiltskin, very unfortunately.
But before the final night, she wanders into the woods, searching for him, and comes across his remote mountain cottage. By the way, another little theme of fairy tales is lots of lovely Airbnb opportunities going to waste. And she watches unseen as he hops about his fire and sings. He reveals his name and his song's lyrics. Tonight, tonight, my plans I make. Tomorrow, tomorrow, the baby I take. The queen will never win the game. This is the mistake coming. For Rumpelstiltskin is my name.
Ah! That's a great song, though.
It's a banger. That was actually on my Spotify Unwrapped, that song. Great song. When the imp comes to the queen on the third day, after first feigning ignorance, she reveals his name, Rumpelstiltskin, and he loses his temper at the loss of their bargain. Versions vary about whether he accuses the devil or witches of having revealed his name to the queen. In the 1812 edition of the Brothers Grimm tale, Rumpelstiltskin then ran away angrily and never came back. That's a good ending. The ending was revised, though, in the 1857 edition, to a more gruesome ending when Rumpelstiltskin, in his rage, drove his right foot so far into the ground that it sank up to his waist. We have covered that.
I did tell this whole story before.
You have told this whole story.
That's when we covered it, when Ben told it, yeah.
Yeah, you did tell it, didn't you? In the original... This is another quite funny version. In the oral version, originally collected by the Brothers Grimm, Rumpelstiltskin flies out of the window on a cooking ladle.
I'll be off then.
That'll win me off. Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't mention that I can make cooking utensils fly, and I can get on them and travel about. It wasn't even, you know, don't even go back. It wasn't even seeded in the story. But I can control cooking utensils. Literally, the last beat of this story is I can control cooking utensils. I can make them hover, and I'm off on one now. All right, bye.
And there was one in the room all along. See you later.
And there was one in the room all along. But you see, Disney's not going to go with that. In the Disney version of this, that's going to be one of the first things to go, because, you know, it's got to obey that that story.
Well, in the Disney version, at the end, she would fall in love with Rumpelstiltskin, and they would be married.
He turned out to be super hot after all.
Yeah. And you know what? All that was lacking was he needed to be kissed. She would kiss Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
His face would fall off.
Yeah. Revealing Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. Chris Hemsworth's face on a horse.
He's Hemsworth hot. He's still a complete bastard, but he's hot, fine.
He's a hot one, though. And he goes, my name isn't Rumpelstiltskin. It's Hemsworth-sklubsklin. Hemsworth-sklubsklin, Hemsworth-sklubsklin.
Hemsworth is my name. Look at my abs, they ripple.
Look at that thing on my knee. It's a supernumerary nipple. Milk it. The witches must eat their cereal. Yeah. Lovely.
Okay, it's time for your emails.
Yes, please.
And rather than using the version of the email jingle that I made, we're going to play one of your versions.
Oh, brilliant.
This is a crooner version.
Really?
It's from Tom Crowley.
No. As in our Tom Crowley?
From Crowley
Good
Time.
Old Tom Crowley.
From the podcast Crowley Time.
Crowlers?
Oh, I'm very excited about this.
I'm going to plug his podcast. It's really funny. It's a kind of one-man sketch show called Crowley Time. Really good.
You should listen to it. It's a very, very funny...
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to it, there'll be a link in the notes.
Real right. Good stuff, guys.
Despite the experimental electronic sound of the classic email jingle, I can always hear a smooth Las Vegas nightclub-style jazz bow number aching to burst out of it. And so I made this.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before. Morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, hey! This represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse. Give me your hoof. Beep, beep. My beautiful horse.
Oh, get that man to Vegas. Pronto, pronto.
Turf out Adele. You've got a new resident in town. That was good.
Thank you, good old Tom Crowley.
Very good.
Very good, Tom. Thank you. Emails. Ruth emails. I have on several occasions been listening to episodes of your podcast when the very place I am in is mentioned on the podcast.
Ruth isn't from Bremen, is she?
Does she work in a Pratt?
She says, I can forgive and dismiss a reference to a Sainsbury's local, being as I am a Londoner, but when thrice in a week you have caught me in the very place you're mentioning, I cannot help be suspicious. One, boots. I'd popped in to get a lip balm and hear your discussion of the space-age doors and the fact that we all spend too much time in boots.
Oh, dear.
Two, a Ryman's. Mm-hmm. Three, the actual Royal Albert Hall.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
I'd been to the Royal Albert Hall and just stepped out and plugged in the headphones. Not 2 minutes later, you're talking about getting married in the toilets of the Royal Albert Hall.
Ah, sorry, Ruth. What's happened there is that you have been conjured into existence by a podcast.
Yes.
I'm afraid you are a figment of the hive brain imagination of us and all of our listeners.
Yeah, sorry. It does. It's something we're trying to iron out, but...
Well, it's an unregulated world, isn't it? So it's...
So she might feel that she's a, 35-year-old woman, but in fact, she's only actually been around for about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And those memories will be very convincing, I think.
So she's a kind of a sort of bean waif, is it? What we're calling them? What?
A wisp.
A bean wisp, isn't it?
A bean of the wisp.
She's a bean of the wisp. So what we're working on is a sort of slightly Ghostbusters-esque bean of the wisp sort of Hoover device, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. When she'll be safely destroyed.
Yeah. So if you could turn yourself into Bean HQ,
yeah, which is Annie Pratt. London. I know this is, and I'm sorry, this is going to be a hard listen for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're a bean wisp. We need to hoover you into a kind of a Hoover bag thing, a special Hoover bag, isn't it? And there'll be a few other bean wisps in there.
Yeah, we're not quite sure how to process the bags after that yet. We're going to have to iron that out.
But we think there's a way that we can link it probably, up.
We think we can store you in Ben's broken down Hyundai i10 on a street in Cardiff for the time being.
That's the best we've got at the moment.
Yeah. That's the only storage space any of us have, really.
Yeah.
But sorry, Ruth, you are not in any real sense a human being or a person. You don't have a soul.
I think the nearest thing in the physical space that we know of that we could compare you to in terms of sort of emotional makeup, or in terms of how much reality you have, would be they used to be called crab sticks, but now called seafood sticks, isn't it?
So like what, like the kind of the sense memory of a living thing. But,
exactly. Yeah. That's right. But actually to trace it back to an actual fish or lobster would be a fool's errand.
Yes, because every fish, like every seafood stick is made of the essence of about 5 million crustaceans that have been caught over the course of the last 50 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to unscramble that omelette would be...
Well, it can't be done.
No. Can't be done.
That's probably not the news you wanted, Ruth.
Yeah. No. But sorry, I can say, I think this is a bit harsh on Ruth, everything we're saying. I'm going to come up with another theory.
Okay.
Which is that Ruth is actually a normal functioning and I hope happy human being.
Well, has she by mistake paid for the platinum package?
She may.
Oh, the geolocation package, yeah.
She may have paid for the platinum package.
Which she may not need, because that's only for people who have absolutely no capacity to imagine anything at all and physically need to be in the place that we're describing.
Yes.
That hasn't been very popular at all.
No, and because she spotted it, that suggests that she probably doesn't need it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Although what's nice for her is that if we mention, for example, Nigel Havers, she'll probably meet Nigel Havers.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
So, you know, there's... It's a good package.
She'd have spent a hell of a lot of time with Russell Crowe by now, wouldn't she?
Yeah. And also, what's that that's just appeared in her right hand? A cheque signed to Henry Packer, P-A-K-E-R, for £25 million. And also an envelope with Henry Packer's actual address on it, which I'm not going to say, but it is the correct address. And a free stamp. First class. I think what's happened...
There's a few possibilities of what happens.
Yeah, so I think the other possibility is that it's a bit like if you say to a room of 1,000 people, whose birthday is it today? A surprisingly large amount of them will say, it's my birthday today. And that's because of something to do with probability and math that's a bit confusing, where it feels like... You'll go, oh, this feels like a coincidence, but it's not, actually. So, for example, no, if there's 365 people in a room.
More than one, it'll be their birthday, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not a coincidence. It's the nature of math. It's confusing. So I think what's happened is it feels like a coincidence, but the fact is if you live in London, you're pretty much always either in a Boots or a Ryman's or the Albert Hall. I mean, there's nowhere else. Where else are you going to be? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not a coincidence. It's just you're in London. You're going to be in one of those places most of the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
A huge chunk of the time you've been in one of those places. So it could be it's just not a coincidence. It just feels like a coincidence, but it isn't.
And what a life.
Exactly. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. Whereas in Exeter, you're just, you know, probably you're at home or you're in a slaughterhouse. That's about it, basically.
Yeah. Or both.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you very much.
We make a monthly bonus episode, which is made up of... I never explain this very well, but every week we record a lot more than we end up putting out in these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We save stuff back and we put them out for Patreon only.
Yeah.
So, for example, I don't know what we'll end up using for this episode, but probably something to do with Rumpelstiltskin or something. Anyway.
Could be, yeah.
There's more stuff. Patreon.com/3beansalad. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier... You get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge.
Oh, you better believe you do.
Where Mike is recording from as we speak.
That's true.
You're still there.
Well, there's a bit of a cleanup job this morning after last night. You see?
Yeah. A messy one.
It was a bit.
It was awful messy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it the paintballing with 80s pop stars night?
Yeah.
Oh, it's always a messy one. Clear up is something to behold, isn't it, after that?
Andrew Ridgely's aim is completely shot.
Well, you'll hear all about it in my report. It was the paintballing with 80s pop stars night last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, and by gum, did it get out of hand quickly. Few loungers got past the front door without being ambushed by Benjamin Sleep and teammate Pat Benatar, who fired paintballs from a fully elevated cherry picker they'd parked in the Sean Bean atrium. Holly barricaded herself in the unisex beanbog with Terence Trent D'Arby and a Luther Vandross tribute act, but came under sustained attack from Cyndi Lauper using Shed Judd as a human shield. Dan Witt was betrayed by the Bengals during a game of Capture the Flag, but they in turn fell foul of a pincer movement executed to perfection by Faye Simcox Lawrence and the lads from Depeche Mode. Some admonitions for safety violations were regrettably necessary. Phil Collins accidentally discharged a high-velocity pellet into Jasper Bash's lunchbox at point-blank range, and despite repeated warnings, Belinda Carlisle kept shooting Johnny Barge in the arse.
Elsewhere, Richard's 40th birthday went toe-to-toe with Huey Lewis and the news and came out of it looking like a three-year-old's painting of some tropical sick. Despite his notoriously poor aim, Andrew Ridgeley insisted on being the point man for a raid on Madonna's stronghold, La Isla Go Fuck Yourself. Ridgeley accidentally took out teammates Brandon Cassin and Grace Jones before they'd even broken cover, and ricocheted a paint pellet into Bonnie Tyler's mouth, meaning Glenn Johnston's usual bright-eyes bedtime lullaby was off the schedule for the evening. Special commendations went to the ungovernable menace who managed to, quote-unquote, Salvador Dali the Human League by pouring 8,000 melted paintballs over the top of them while they cowered on the Sean Bean patio, and to Alison Moyet, who Jackson Pollocked Douglas McIntosh so hard that the Sean Bean infirmary staff declared the changes permanent. Thanks all.
Right, that's the show. We will finish with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. And it's from Robin of Bremen.
Thank you, Robin.
He has sent in what he describes as an industrial techno version of the theme tune.
Oh, wow.
So this will get your blood pumping. Nice. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye. Happy New Year. Cheerio.